we're going to discuss three questions. Question number one is the question of how far do we go in pushing somebody away, even to the extent that the person theoretically would leave Judaism, like leave the Jewish community altogether and say, you know what, they don't want me, I'm leaving Judaism, I'm leaving the religion or whatever, I'm going to, you know, stop keeping Torah laws and things like that. Question number one. Question number two is, how should this affect, or should this affect his family, i.e., should the children be, you know, taken out of schools, something like that? Is that fair? Is that allowed? Where other people get impacted by, you know, one person's actions, should other people be impacted by or not? And the third question we're going to look at is there a way for this person to repent, to do teshuvah, basically? And what is the way to do teshuvah, and how are we supposed to kind of, you know, this is reaction question, how are we supposed to react when these people re-enter our communities? Obviously a sensitive topic, as we know, but I think it's very important, and our shuls and our communities are, for better or for worse, not filled with these people, but some of these people are present in our midst. Again, all the rules of the Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha and, you know, love our fellow Jew, those things still apply. I always like to share the story about a kid who got kicked out of a school in Yerushalayim, it was in Yerushalayim, somewhere in Israel, and whatever he was doing, got kicked out of the school, and then 1 week later, the kid was sitting in the principal's office learning, like having a chavruta with the principal. And everybody said, like, what are you doing? Didn't that kid just get kicked out of the school? So he said, yeah, but he's not accepted back in the school, but doesn't mean I'm not supposed to care for the child and still keep him, you know, strong. So that kind of question about balance. Okay, so let's look at the sources. So first of all, it's a quote from the Shulchan Aruch, which is source number one. Some are Hebrew, some are English. I'll translate it, whatever we read in Hebrew. So overall, Davar Isur, somebody who transgresses something that's prohibited from the Torah, it's a very broad kind of category. Minadi no tola alta. Minadi means we excommunicate them. So likely we're dealing with something that is a serious type of, let's call it public desecration of Shabbat. Would be like, exactly, like, you know, doing something in the public eye that you're making a scene out of the fact that you're not keeping a certain Torah law. You know, you can think of many, but that was the first one that comes to mind. You know, a person walks into a very kosher environment and eats something that's not kosher. This isn't necessarily about people that aren't observant of halacha, but it's about how do you go about not being observant, right? You take your non-observance and you bring it into the public sphere. So the Ramah adds, this is the part that I want to focus on, how far do we go? He writes, Menadin l'mishu chayav nidui, a person who's kind of convicted of having this excommunication in a different time in history literally meant that you were kind of sent out of the community, an outcast, bless you. Today might mean, you know, we don't give you membership in a shul, or we I don't know, like in the case of some of these husbands who aren't giving their wives divorce documents and gets, protests outside of their house, things of that nature. Vafilu, and the Ramah writes, Vafilu yesh lachush, or don't count them for minyan, things of that nature. Vafilu yesh lachush al yedei kein, yetzei l'tarbut ra'ah, even if we think that by result of treating them this way, they're going to end up in a tarbut ra'ah, which basically means going off the path, okay, leaving Judaism or leaving the community, ein lachush bekach. We shouldn't be concerned for it. In other words, the value of upholding the community standard of you know, of respect for halacha and Torah law, that trumps the value of one person being pushed away or choosing to you know, to kind of leave the fold. Comments, questions? You want to say something? Maybe? Okay, what's it based on? What's it based on? Is there a source for this idea? So the source seems to be... Okay, we'll hear what you have to say in a second. So let's look at the source first. So Gemara in Masechet Kiddushin. Okay? Disclaimer is, this is a hotly debated topic. Again, we're presenting one side. We're going to see both sides of the coin. So there's a Gemara Masechet Kiddushin, which presents the following scenario, or kind of happening, okay? So this is in English. When Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was dying, he said prophetically, the dot, dot, dot is, he said a number of things. I'm focusing on one part of what something that he said. And these were pronouncements about developments that were happening in the community, okay? There's a bunch of stuff going on. People were doing X, Y, and bad things. And he wanted to kind of raise the warning bell on these things that were going on. So here's what he said. There's a place called Birita de Satya in Babylonia, in Babel. Today, they turned away from the omnipresent, which means people there were not following, you know, the Torah laws. What did they do? A ditch with fish overflowed, and they went and trapped the fish on Shabbat. Okay, so trapping fish on Shabbat is one of the 39 prohibited melachot, prohibited creative activities we're supposed to refrain from on Shabbat. And Rabbi Achai, son of Rabbi Yoshe, excommunicated them, and they all became apostates. Apostates means they left the path of you know, Judaism. They just abandoned Judaism, basically. So this is the source that the commentaries used eventually that became the source for this halakha that we read in source number one. And this is basically a public statement about Chilul Shabbat, about desecration of Shabbat. And despite the fact that there was a possibility that these guys were going to end up, you know, leaving the path, that did not seem to be a concern of Rabbi, whoever it was, Rabbi Achai, in this particular case, that we should, you know, we should worry about their spiritual, you know, soul type of thing, because they've chosen this path. We don't have to care about them anymore. They can choose what they want to do. They want to leave the community. That's up to them. We have to uphold, you know, the holiness, the sanctity of the community, and we can't just let people do whatever they want and not have any consequences. Good? Clear? Makes sense. Okay. So now, what's the flip side of this? What's the kind of counter argument, if you want to call it that? There's a commentary called the Taz, Rav David Halevi Siegel. He's in source 3. It's a long source. We're not going to read the whole thing inside. I'm going to mention a few of the things that he says. He is against this idea, okay, in a nutshell. He believes that we have to really be careful about pushing people away. And, you know, someone comes back to the community, we shouldn't just say to them, oh, you know what, you can't be a member in the shul, and we don't really care what you just decide to do with your life, with your Judaism, etc. So he writes, I'll just point out a few of the lines, that he doesn't believe that the source that we quoted, the source from Masechet Kiddushin, that story of the guys who were trapping fish on Shabbat, he doesn't really believe that that's a good proof text. In other words, that story wasn't coming to tell us a law. That was coming to warn people. You know what? There's something going on here in our community which is not appropriate. It's a desecration of Shabbat. It's a public desecration of Shabbat. Don't associate yourself with those people. But was it coming to say this, like, strong statement of, you know, we don't really care about their Judaism, we don't really care what happens to them, this is more important? The Taz feels that source was not coming to tell us a rule, but it was just a one-time thing where this happened in that community, and the rabbi in that town said, I want you to be cautious to not associate yourself with these people, don't have them over in your house, they're going to be a bad influence on your kids, that kind of thing. But it wasn't this, you know, this overarching big kind of statement of, you know what we're going to say about these kinds of people? That was not what it was about. In fact, he says that here, if you look in the fourth line, he says, Kashem, my kamashalan tamud behind Milta, what's coming to teach us? Rabbeinu HaKadosh Gufei l'may hilcha taniva davar zeh. He wasn't coming to tell us halacha. If you look in the next line, he says, Dahata mashna shirbeinu HaKadosh bala has here. If you look six lines down, the word has here means to warn. The repurpose of what he was doing was to warn the people, Sheidu sheish psulim b'bavel. You should know there's a few not good people in your community who don't follow the laws, who don't follow the rules. And these are people, doesn't mean that they're kicked out. It just means be wary of them. Be cautious of them. You know, don't go over to their house and eat their eat in their kitchen, kind of thing. But that you shouldn't, that you should totally and utterly reject them, that wasn't what was intended. Diyesh makom shukulam amzirim, and he brings a bunch of different... Okay, so now he wants to bring a source to prove that we should be very careful about pushing people away. So if you look in the bold, it says, Yeshli lahavi ra'aya ipcha. He brings a logical idea, or counter-argument, which is the exact opposite of what we just said before. And here's what he says. And it's a Gemara that's earlier in Masechet Kiddushin, the same Masechet that had the story about the guys trapping the fish. And the Gemara there says, someone who sold himself into work in a Hindu temple, okay? Let's pick something that we know is like real idolatry in today's kind of terminology, okay? Something that's like not worship of the one God who created the world, okay? So you're going to work over there. So that's what the person does. And the Gemara there says, I know lachtov la'itzim, okay, in that case he was chopping wood over there, shar tzarchim, lo l'shem elohut, v'amrat torah shetzarich ligolotu. There's a rule that we have to do everything we can to get that person back, to bring that person back. Financially, pay off the people, whatever the story is, we have to do everything we can to bring that person and get that person out of that situation. And he says, it's about halfway down the page. You say, you know, that's like somebody who falls and you roll a rock on top of them. Right? It's like they're all already in a bad situation and now we're going to make it worse by not helping them out. You know, it's like the person chose this kind of lifestyle, so maybe we should just say, forget it. We're going to forget about that person and leave him off in some, what are they called? Ashrams? How are you? Ashrams, no? Is that what it's called? Well, yeah, we're supposed to help them. We're supposed to do everything we can to get them out of the situation. And it's based on a pasuk in the Torah. Not help them do their work, but help them get out of their work. Just so it's clear,
yeah,
right?
No,
we're not supposed to be assisting them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the question that I have is that, okay, I understand like this kind of situation, but let's say you have somebody who did something like, when I say bad, I mean like really bad, like awkward with like a rapist or something like that.
Okay.
Or like a serial like killer or somebody who, like, you know what I mean? Like it's obviously on the same level as breaking Shabbat, kind of, I understand that, but like where it's a little bit more community conscious, like you wouldn't necessarily want
to.
Yes, those
people
person.
Are probably not going to get out for like 25
Yeah. Yeah,
but someone can maybe, okay. Like, for example, there have been situations where, like, you know, let's say where you had a man who was, you know, sexually harassing or assaulting girls in a seminary or in a school, and people have been quiet and they didn't report it because they were concerned about Lashon Hara or affecting the kids. Somebody like that, though, are you going to go out of your way to help them?
Right. So I think it goes back to the question in the beginning about the, you know, how far do we go with this, like, v'hatzel rechecho kamocha concept? Again, so I think, you know, again, case by case, and who am I to say? I'm not a mental health professional or any of these things that I can comment on, but the idea that we can help this person find help, I don't think is outside of our responsibility.
To help find help. No, I'm not gonna.
But yeah, this, okay, so good. So we'll see in a minute. This specific case, many argued and said, it's not a good proof. Because in that circumstance, the only reason the person went to go work in that idolatry shop, whatever, was because they needed a job. Mm-hmm. They weren't doing it because they wanted to worship idols. They were doing it because they needed parnassah. They needed some form of you can't use that as a proof if the whole circumstance was so specific to that situation where they needed a job. So, you know, so they look at it as he says, you know, so the Taz is kind of defending this, right? And he pushes hard on it. We'll see a second proof that he brings in a minute. If you look though, and most of the commentaries side with the way that we quoted at the beginning, which is we got to be strict about this stuff. If you look in source 4, one reason we have to be strict about it is what happens to the justice system, right? It undermines the whole justice system. We're talking about Jewish courts here for a minute, but the same would be true, I think, in the secular courts as well, which is the sense that if we're celebrating, and this, again, not to necessarily point out one particular news item or another, if we're celebrating the release of an individual who has committed crimes and was convicted of X crime or Y crime, what does that do to the justice system? So the Shach in the Kudot HaKesef in Source 4, he writes, Hiksha al Marami, he's talking about the Truman Adeshim, Yeshiko Korayotav, he doesn't like this Source 3, the Taz. They were contemporaries. So they argued with each other very often. And he says, the Hacha Kevan Didin Beitin, who? This was a rule that came down. The excommunication isn't like from random people in the community. It comes from the like courts, like the Jewish court and the or like the head rabbis or something of the community. Ein Lachush, Din Lokin Betela Din Li Yisrael. Right? Beitin has no authority if we just keep undermining it every time someone gets off and saying, you know, and it doesn't mean we're not responsible to those people as fellow Jews, but that doesn't mean we can undermine the justice system. So let's look at a second refutation as you turn to the backside. Interesting question that came up, and we'll get into some of the interesting cases that were asked to rabbis throughout the generations on this topic. So here's one that was asked to the Chavot Ya'ir, Rav Ya'ir Bakrak. He lived in 17th century. So it's a couple hundred years ago his question came up. And here's what he said. He said, Ploni, basically there's a guy who is neglecting a prohibition of drinking non-kosher wine, okay? Non-kosher wine could be non-kosher for different reasons, but the wine is not kosher.
In a public setting?
Yeah, he was doing something, everybody knew about it, and it was something that people knew about. Mubikshu kal ansho b'mamon, and the community wanted to punish him, fine him, they wanted to do something to kind of show him that they disapproved. V'lasot chruz, and they wanted to make an announcement about him, you know, like, this guy is doing this and this and this, and people should, whatever, stay away from him, or not give him respect, not give him an aliyah. The harav, and the rabbi, who is their rabbi, micha biyadam, and he said, no, we shouldn't go too intensely on him, right? Damro, di'ikala mechash hefker tfei, what's going to happen? He'll do worse things. Okay, so here you have, like, the rabbi of the community versus the community, and this is, like, an interesting, probably would happen even today, you could imagine it, where the community feels, like, very strongly that someone, you know, shouldn't be respected, and the rabbi says, no, you know, I know the person, and I spent time, you know, helping this person, etc., and you have this little bit of a fight, and the rabbi says, if we push him away, what's he going to end? He'll end up leaving the community altogether. At least now he's doing things, but he's not doing so many things. He's not doing it so often or whatever. If we push him away, then it'll be even worse. He'll leave the religion. And then the blame is going to go on the community, right? So everyone's going to say it's the community's fault, and they're the ones who pushed him away. So essentially what he writes is that, you know, so the concern that the offender's defection can override the need to make a public statement. That's basically what this is about. So in his answer, in the second paragraph, he comes out in favor of the community. And he basically says that, we'll just read one or two lines, don't worry, what's going to happen, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. What's more important is that we don't turn a blind eye, because what's worse? Is it worse, and it's kind of like weighing values, what's worse, that this guy's going to end up leaving, which he's choosing anyway to live a certain lifestyle, so it's going from bad to worse, in a sense, versus the message that we're sending the rest of the generation, the rest of the community, the younger generation, whatever, all the people who are going to see this and say, oh, no one, you know, no one said anything, no one made a big deal out of it. He writes it there in the fourth line. If you look in the fourth line, in the second paragraph, he says, "Umame od srichin ana lachush lekilkul hador." He says, "Kilkul hador" means, you know, the disaffection is going to be much greater if we don't say something than if we do say something. The Chatam Sofer as well agrees, as I mentioned, that he's the one who pointed out that case of the person going to work in the idolatry shop was a case where the person needed the money. So it's not even a good proof. It's not even a good proof altogether to, you know, and by the way, that's actually a proof in the opposite direction. The reason why we're saving the person is because they did it out of financial constraint, because they didn't have anything to live. So we have an obligation as a community to financially support the people in our community who can't support themselves. But we don't have an obligation to support people who are sinning in the same way, right, or at all, in this case. So we have a lot of arguments, very strong arguments, going in the direction of, you know, saying that this person is somebody we shouldn't necessarily be giving respect to. Go ahead.
Would this also act for, let's say, things that, let's say, a community accepts, but it's not necessarily a Torah law? So, like a chumrah. So, for example, let's say, like, the whole community holds by Halav Yisrael, mm-hmm. and, like, you have a Ben and Jerry's that opens up, and, like, you know, you have, like, Romans are going to the Ben and and Jerry's, like, is that something, obviously, that's something almost silly, but I can maybe think of, let's say, like, or, like, let's say the woman in the community, they hold that they are supposed to cover their legs.
The way they cover their hair, okay, yeah.
And, like, they're supposed to cover their hair, let's say, with two coverings, one covering.
It's a great question. Right. So let's just repeat the question, just so it's any type of practice in the community which isn't strict letter of the law, halakha, but is something that the community has taken on as a practice, the entire community, you know, and one person is going against that and doing it differently. I don't think we can say that if someone's actually keeping halakha, then we're allowed to get angry at them. I think communities are entitled to have standards, you know, that they can talk to people about and educate people about that these are the standards that we want you to abide by. And theoretically, the private organizations, I don't know, they could have a rule book, they could have a contract, you know, membership contract, things like that. I remember I worked in a school once where it was an Orthodox school, and people that were not Orthodox that wanted to send their children to that school had to commit to some kind of learning or education about whatever it was, Hilchot Shabbat or Kashrut, which was, you know, it was kind of like, we want you to be part of our community, but we all have our standards, and we want to make sure that you appreciate the fact that we have our standards. So it's about kind of respecting the fact that if the standards are explicit and you know, the message, I think, is carried over the right way, it's not unreasonable. I'll just mention the other argument that the Taz brings in source number 3 back on the first page. He quotes this comment from an earlier rabbi, the Maharim Mintz, who permitted a couple, two people who were basically dating. This woman had already had children from a previous marriage. But there's a rule in halakha, it's a fascinating concept, that a woman who has a child under the age of 2, which is basically still nursing the child and helping the child get, you know, strong enough to be able to be more independent, etc., she's not allowed to get remarried. There's a strict halakha about this, and the logic behind it is she needs to focus on the child, right? This is a halakha in Evin Ezer, in Shulchan Aruch Evin Ezer. So the question came that this woman was basically wanted to be together with this man, to be married to him. And the fear was, and she had a child who was under the age of 2, and the fear was that if they wouldn't allow her to get married, she would end up living together with this guy, not under halachic marriage. Right? So in this case, the Maharim Mintz, who was this rabbi in the time, was the one who was asked this question, he allowed it, and the reason why he allowed it, he's basically saying it's actually more beneficial to the child that the child should be raised in a home that's a halachic, you know, Jewish home, Torah observant home, as opposed to saying we're not going to allow it, and then what's going to end up happening? So the Taz wanted to use this scenario as a proof that we should be very careful about how we push people away. So this was refuted as well. The Chatam Sofer rejected and said that the whole case by that story of the woman in the marriage case is just as I said. The whole reason he's allowing it is not because we're worried about, you know, the abandonment, but that the child, like I said, the child should grow up in the religious home. So his saying that they're allowed to get married shouldn't be a proof of this idea. Okay, so let's move to the last two parts, which is the question about the children. I can do one more interesting case which came up, which is here in source number 6. This is a case where people were doing. I'm trying to remember what the. Oh yeah, this is what it was. This guy was doing certain sins, whatever it was. This is for the Radvaz. And he said that if you push me away, I'm going to do like a public conversion to another religion, you know. Yeah, he threatened basically that if you whatever you shame me, you give me you public shame me, or you do something against me, So should we be concerned? So the one line I want to read here is the second line. See where it says tshuva in source 6. He says kol yamai ani mitzta'er al zeh. Which is basically saying, like, as like a rabbinic authority, this is a heavy topic. It's a weighty topic. You're choosing basically to include someone in the community or to exclude someone in the community. And we all know in our communities what that means. You know, what that means to be included and excluded. And he says, he's praying every day that he shouldn't say the wrong decision, especially in these kinds of areas. And then he goes on to give the position that we've kind of said, and he reiterates it in different language, but that we have to be so careful that, you know, that the Torah needs to remain with the right seriousness, and people shouldn't ridicule it and think it's being undermined at every given turn. But, and he looks in the last line in verse 6, that everything must be done as a judge and leader sees fit, provided that all his actions are done for the sake of heaven. Which is another way of saying we have to weigh each case, you know, case by case. We can't just have a... Pardon?
And who does that? Like, is that just solely up to, like, the rabbi?
I think it's going to be the community leader, whoever is the community leader. And then in that, you know, probably be, let's say, a shul rabbi, or if it's something that's... You know, I would say it depends. If it's someone who's a member of a shul... So that's going to probably be the rabbi of the shul. If it's someone who's a member of a community, let's say like a mashkiach, or like someone who has a larger kind of role in the Jewish community, someone who's oversees, I don't know, the Eruv of the city, or someone who oversees, I don't know, cases of divorce, whatever it is, someone who's like a more of a community figure, then it probably has to have like a larger group of people who are involved in those kinds of decisions. Okay, so what about children in school? The Chatam Sofer, few approaches to this. Chatam Sofer in source number 7, he has a very creative idea, and what he says here is that by allowing the children to stay in school, they're giving like schut, they're giving like merit through their Torah learning to the person who's the sinner. Now that's an interesting idea, because you're saying like we're going to punish, and this gets into the question, we're punish a child because of the sins of the parent, and he basically says that you can expel the child from the school. That's actually halacha in Shulchan Aruch. It's not just the Chatam Sofer, based on a passage in commentaries in the Gemara, and there are some commentaries who actually differentiate between older children and younger children. Why would that be? Maybe. Let's say it's Bar Mitzvah. I'm not exactly sure if they give a specific age. Right. So it has to do with like. Their independence of mitzvot, right? It's kind of related to the bar bat mitzvah kind of question. That's one approach. And there's the approach of the Aruch HaShulchan. We look in source number 8. He has a simpler approach, and I think this is an important comment that he makes. He says, Yesh reshut lebeitin lahachmir alav. We could be strict. And by the way, this is like, he takes it further. This mention, not to give a brit milah to the person's child. Okay? V'shelo yikaver bekavod. Not to give like an honorable burial, but an honorable burial, whatever that could mean. Im yamut, if that person, no, if the parent.
Yeah, but the kid didn't do
anything.
Kid.
Yeah. Ulagari shepanami betas. In other words, I don't think it means that we disallow the child from getting a brit milah. It just means the community is not going to take care of it. Yeah. Community is not going to be responsible for it. I mean, you're fend for yourself. That's basically the message. Fend for yourself. You want to, well, I'll put it to you this way. You know, putting it in a simple line would be a person who excludes themselves from the community by doing action X.
Yeah.
I mean, using the word deserve with a lot of sensitivity, deserves to be excluded. Mida keneged mida. Right?
And their child does.
Okay. So listen to the way that he presents it. I think it's a very fair presentation. How it would work in reality today, I think, would be very different. How it would be applied today, for a lot of reasons, most of which is like mental health and which is just like that's all around us, right? We're afraid. What's going to happen? Like, you know, we do these things. But, okay, so look at this. It's Ulgaresha Banav mi beta sefer, Yishto mi beta knesset. The wife from the shul shouldn't be allowed to come to the shul either. Ad shikabel alav et adin. But look what he writes. Until the person accepts and perhaps does tshuva.
The person accepts.
In other words, it's not a permanent situation. It's a tactic to get the message through to this person that we're not going to accept you in this community until you come to terms and be kind of upfront about what you've done. Right? So it's much more about a pressure, which, by the way, is exactly what they're doing in the cases of the Agunot, where they have all kinds of different ways, communal pressure. There was a video that was circulating a number of years ago. Have you seen it? I'm going to show it to you after. Of this, the guy who's the head of the organization to help Agunot be freed. Very good to see you. I want to hear your comments. Okay.
Know that I'm Chabad and my family's called Chuba, so I have a lot to say.
Oh, okay. Right. So he comes out and he says that lost my train of thought. Remind me. Yes, thank you. So he's standing in a minyan, and there's nine people. Have you seen this?
I love it.
You've seen it. So this guy's in the room, and this is a person who's been refusing for some time to give his wife a get. And the guy who happens to walk into the wrong room, right? This guy who's the head of the organization who knows all these things, he starts yelling at him, "Get out of the room. You're not allowed to be part of this minyan." And he says, "We're not starting the davening until I actually know exactly the spot in Yeshiva University where this took place." And he says, "We're not starting the minyan until you leave. You're not welcome here." He says, "You're not welcome here." And they just wait. And the guy gets up and he walks up.
The guy that he does something wrong is, of course, this situation, the kid did, unless, like, you know, like...
Right. So the idea... Right. So, again, how this would be applied practically, I think, is very complicated. The idea behind it, that we can put pressure on a person in different types of ways in order for them to... you know, to come forward or whatever it means. He says, the last line, he says, if you think it's not going to help, then you can't do that. If you don't think the person's going to react well, then don't go ahead and kick the kids out of school, because you haven't gained anything by doing that. Okay, Rav Kook has a very interesting case that came his way. The case was in Source 9, where somebody was eating and drinking and working on Yom Kippur, okay, and doing it in a very, known type of way. And what happened in the shul is they sold him the most important honor that you can get on Yom Kippur, which is the maftir that you get in the afternoon. They call it Maftir Yona, okay? It's like, people talk about, like, the highest honor in Judaism is, this is one of the highest honors you can give a person. Maftir Yona. Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year, the holiest part of the day, you know, the end of the day of Yom Kippur.
And they know that he's better.
And they know, yeah. Now, so the rabbi said, if this is going to happen, right? Like, it was leading up to Yom Kippur. I think that was the case. So he said, if this is going to take place, he said, I will commit to never giving any more Torah lectures or speeches if you go ahead with this. Like, if you, the community, goes through with this, I, the rabbi, the community, will not...
The community wanted to give him?
The community, yeah. The community gave it to him. Or he bought it, or whatever it was. They allowed him to have it, okay? However exactly it worked out, they allowed the guy to basically have the honor. So the question was, is the community leader, whoever it was in this case, is that appropriate? Is he allowed to say, I'm not going to, and this is interesting because this is like collective punishment, right? What did all the community people do? Well, not everybody has control over the, you know, it's like, there's a few people who have control over the auctions and who gets the aliyot and all that. And in this specific case, like, everybody else should lose out on, like, the Torah that they're going to learn because of that. So that was the question that Rav Kook was asked. And again, like, broadening it, it's the question of collective punishment. Do we punish innocent people because they're associated with the sinner? The Torah says, "Lo yumtu avot banim al avot u avot al banim," right? Relatives of somebody who sins shouldn't, specifically children and parents, shouldn't be done in because of the sin of the other. On the other hand, we do have a precedent in the Torah for for collective punishment. That's the case of the Ir Nidachat. A city where people are worshipping idolatry is a city that's supposed to be destroyed. It's only in the land of Israel. It's supposed to be burned down to the ground, basically. What if there are people in the city, I think the Gemara even has, like if there's like a mezuzah on one of the doors or something. Like, if there are people, not everybody's worshipping idols in the city, but the whole city gets thrown in to the verdict, right? So we do have cases of collective punishment. So Rav Kook, in his tshuva, in Source 9, in Dar Kohen, he basically comes out and he says that the whole thing is an issue of Chilul Hashem. It's an issue of Chilul Hashem, and he compares it to the case of the Givonim. The case of the Givonim was a story in the Navi with David HaMelech, where Shaul had killed a group, a bunch of people from a tribe called the Givonite tribe. And it was unjustified, basically. It was unlawful what he had done. And they came, wanted to kind of get back and call it revenge or whatever. David gave them some of Shaul's people. Okay, if you remember the story, David gave them some of Shaul's people to give them an opportunity to, whatever it was, carry out some kind of retribution justice. Now, he says, but doesn't it say collective punishment? You're going to punish these people for what? For the actions of one person who was disconnected from the story. So he writes back, Mutav Shete Aker, if you look seven lines down, it's better that one letter of the Torah should not be, you know, uprooted. The Lo Yichalel Shem Shemayim Befer Hesed. Sorry, the opposite. The one letter of the Torah should be uprooted. Then, you know, the name of God in the world should be uprooted. And then he writes in the key line here, the Shema Mina Shebemakom Sheish Tzorach Shel Migdar Milta Neged Chil Hashem. If this is like the outcome, the impact of the action is going to create such a shockwave of desecration of the religion of God, of Torah, etc. Then it's right. So he allowed, in this case, he said that the rabbi was allowed to make that condition, that if you're going to let this guy have the aliyah on Yom Kippur, I'm not going to be involved in these things. Okay, let's just wrap it up and talk a little bit about repentance for a minute. If you look in source number 10, the Shulchan Aruch talks about different types of sinners. So there's people who are mosrim. Mosrim is like one of the worst sins in Judaism, where a person gives over secrets about someone to the non-Jewish authorities so they can go after them. This isn't like someone's doing something illegal. Obviously, illegal is illegal, but this is where they're betraying. It's betrayal, yeah. Basically. Apikorsim, people who are heretical, people who are like publicly going against Torah law, etc. So these are all people who are invalidated to be witnesses. And then he writes, even if they said sorry, right? Even if they did ask for mechila, it's not enough until they actually show that they've done a certain kind of tshuva. And in this case, it would be like payment. If it had to be monetary payment, they would have to pay back. If you look in source 11, they have to actually go before people to that it should be kind of undone. Their excommunication should be released. And then in the last source here, I just brought this this comment about like a program for repentance, like some kind of rehab program that this person should go through for this specific guy, this betrayer, this person who is a betrayer. And basically what it says is, the person has to feel bad and repent and break his spirit. If he has to pay back, if it's monetary, he has to pay back, etc. And it goes through, what tshuva is, and not so different than what we know tshuva to be. So I think kind of as a kind of concluding point, it seems reasonable that any type of crime would follow this kind of principle. Meaning, in the sense that like, in this, I'm saying, in the sense that like, offenders, many times these criminals are repeat, mm-hmm. right? Many yeah. times it's not just a one-time thing, it's a repeating thing. And we want to be able to see, and it's like even removed from criminal activity, just talk about like addiction for a minute. When I talk about something that a person is doing, something, a behavior, it's a repeating behavior, we don't want to be able to see the person actually changed. They've actually stepped away from that kind of behavior. There has to be some clear sign. I don't know when that is and when that takes place, but it's hard to imagine that there's ever a type of sin, and this is what sensitive, saying it sensitively, going back to what we said at the beginning, that there's ever a type of sin that we as a Jewish community cannot forgive, right? It's a hard, it's hard, it's very hard, it's very difficult. But, you know, compassion is easy, compassion is easy when it's easy, when it's obvious, when, you know, but it's hard when... when it's not obvious that we're supposed to, you know, we're supposed to, and I'll just give one last perspective. I'm not going to read it on the back, but Rav Soloveitchik has a comment that at the end of the life of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who is the rabbi that snuck out of Jerusalem in the coffin, remember that story, to go and ask for one part of the Jewish community to stay alive. It's the time of the destruction of the Second Temple, and he says we have to be give us the city of Yavne and its scholars, and he could have asked for Jerusalem. So at the end of his life, he's on his deathbed, and his students are standing around, and he's crying. And they say to him, "What are you crying about? You've lived such a fantastic life, inspired and taught Torah, and etc." So he says, "The end of a person's life, the end of my life, I'm going to be shown two pathways. One's leading to hell, Gehenim, and the other one's leading to Gan Eden." So all the commentaries ask, "This is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's one of the greatest, you know, rabbis in Jewish history." And he's saying there's one path, possibly there's a path that he's being led to that's the path of kind of punishment and devastation. So Soloveitchik, in a book called The Rav Speaks, in one of his essays and lectures, he explained this to mean that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai at the end of his life had doubts about that one decision that he made in his life, which was maybe the wrong decision. That maybe he should have asked for Jerusalem and not asked for Yavne. It's very harsh, right? That he's saying that what was he, and he felt so conflicted, he didn't have closure about it, that maybe that one decision impacted Jewish history in such a dramatic way, that he lived with that weight, and at the end of his life he was crying about that. And, you know, I think it's kind of bringing everything full circle. Of course, all the decisions that we make, no matter what our position is in the community, make an impact. They might make a small impact, but communal leaders, people that have that kind of spotlight on them, how much more so the decisions that they make and the way that they impact the community. And we have to be so careful about our reaction when these people are re-entering our community, and how we do it in the right and sensitive way. Okay.
And that is why I cannot be a rabbi.
Yeah.
My responsibility.